What the hell is this place? Just looking around, I can tell you that whatever is going on, spheres are a theme. And so are insects. We are on a sphere spinning around, a much bigger sphere, which happens to be burning hot enough to singe my face even at this distance. While other spheres of various sizes do the same thing. And the smaller, sad, little dead poet sphere with acne scars spins around this, lighting the night and increasing violent crime. Our blue ball is primarily populated by small things with exoskeletons. Invertebrates outnumber us, outweigh us, outvary us, and bite us more often than we bite them. What is this place? Why is this place? Who approved it? And are the investors happy? It's a great book called A Tilt and a Whirl. It's a book about the world and the confusing nature of this world. And one of the points the author makes is how you answer the question of what kind of world that we live in. Someone grab the door for Jeff. Sorry, thanks. How you answer the questions of what kind of world we live in and why this world exists really will shape how you live. So we get caught up with consuming the world around us, particularly in our culture, thinking that it all kind of revolves around us, that we fail to stop and think, well, what kind of world is it? Is the world random? Is the world a veil of illusion? Is this physical world a prison? Is this world, as is popular in our culture, just an insignificant speck floating on a vast sea of nothingness? Where do we live? What kind of planet are we on? And within the Christian worldview, if you're not a Christian this morning, Genesis 1 is foundational to understanding what kind of world it is that we inhabit. And Genesis 1, whatever you make of evolution and science, and we can talk about that afterwards, I think there are good answers to those questions. But I'm not persuaded Genesis 1 is a scientific textbook. When Moses wrote these words, he wasn't thinking about Darwin at all. Darwin came some 2,000 years after Moses penned these words. So we mustn't approach these words and read into them our theories. They have implications for our theories, absolutely, but that's not primarily what Moses has in mind, and you can talk more to me about that later if you like. But what I think we do find is that as we began to introduce last Sunday, is that Genesis 1 is a song, a love song about God's creation. A song about how chaos becomes a cosmos. A song about darkness, the chief enemy of this creation, being driven away by light. You see that in verse 3, look down at that, don't you? Let there be light, and the darkness and the chaos is driven away. And then notice that all the way through, Moses repeats, and there was evening and there was morning. Every day is another opportunity for darkness to drive away the light. Chaos ends in order, darkness ends in light. So it's a song about how formlessness becomes shaped and ordered, how emptiness begins to teem with an abundance of flourishing life, how something dark and formless becomes beautiful and awesome. How a formlessness becomes this creation that's so glorious that one writer says, sometimes when you look at a stunning view or are struck by creation, sometimes you just want to kind of climb inside it. I love that image of wanting. Do you know what she means by that? Climbing inside, it's so good, so glorious. Now, you may remember last week we saw that the New Testament gives us more information about Genesis chapter 1, that the God who creates in verse 1 is not a cosmic nomad. He's not isolated and alone in need of company. He's not a ruler with no one to rule or a master with no slaves. No, as we meet the Lord Jesus, we find that the God who speaks the world into being is none other than the triune Lord, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And so the word that God speaks in Genesis chapter 1, in the power of the Spirit, verse 2, that's brooding over the waters, is Christ himself. God sends out his Son, if you like, in the power of the Spirit, and life explodes. See, one writer has wonderfully described creation as the pillow talk of the Trinity. The pillow talk of the Trinity. It's like God essentially says in all eternity to himself, within himself, that this love that we know, Father, Son, and Spirit, is too good to keep to ourselves. Now let's spread it out. Let's share it. And so the creation comes. The Father creates all things by Christ and for Christ in the power of the Spirit. And through the Son, the Word, God makes a world. Not because he needs it, not because he's lonely, but so that others might share in his love and in his goodness. And Genesis 1 is the first love song. The Bible starts with a love song about creation. Now, as I said, I know this chapter raises lots of questions about origins and science and all the rest of it, and I find that stuff interesting to talk about, and I'd love to talk about it if that's a particular issue for you. But for the rest of this morning, for the next sort of 20 minutes or so, I just want us to hear the song. I just want us to hear the repeated chorus that seems to flow out of Genesis chapter 1, that the earth belongs to God, that the earth that God has made is good, and that the earth God has made is shines his grace in an extraordinary way. So firstly, the earth belongs to the Lord. You can't help but notice that, can you, as you hear this chapter read? It's filled with God's commands, isn't it? And God said, and it was so. What he says, he always accomplishes. What he says, he always achieves. And God said, and God said, and God said, and God said, and it was so, and it was so, and it was so, and it was so. It is at the command of the Lord that life appears. And so Moses wants his first readers, probably the people of Israel, as they've left Egypt, heading towards the promised land, is probably when Genesis was written. And what he wants them to know is they sort of are fearful about, is the land God has promised possible? Is it a reality for us? Will God keep his promises? Moses says, absolutely. Because the universe and the creation that you're living in is his. It belongs to him. He made it. He owns it. He rules over it. He's the sustainer. He's the governor. He's the provider. He's the sovereign. He's the majestic creator of everything. He can do anything he wants. And so when he says he's taking you to a land, remember that the universe came because he said it would be so. You can really trust his promises. The earth belongs to the Lord. It's his. Which has profound implications for us in a Western individualistic culture. Because it means that you and I, we're not autonomous. We're not independent. We're not self-reliant as much as you think you are. No, you are a creature belonging to a creator. Could someone open the door again? Sorry. You are a creature belonging to a creator. You're not here because you thought it was a good idea that you would be here, or that the world needed you. You're here because God created you. The alternative is that you're here because at some point in the distant past, the universe burped and you happen to be the product of that burp. That's the other story you could tell yourself. But you're here because you're created, says Genesis 1. To put it a slightly different way, if God were not at this very moment acting in the capacity as creator, sustaining the world, we would not at this very moment exist. You might regulate him in your mind and your heart to the corners of the cosmos as though you don't need him, but the reality is every breath you take every morsel of food you consume, every brain cell you use to achieve your great ends come because he says so, because he willed it. And this has wonderful implications for what it means to be a human being. It means you are not stardust, as attractive as writers have made that sound. You're not the product of stardust. You're not an accident of history, albeit a nice accident. Your value this morning is not in the number of Facebook likes you got for your post last night. It's not in how many bedrooms that your house has. It's not in what car you drive or what sexuality you identify with or what gender you identify with. You're not significant because of your career, and you're not insignificant because you don't have a career. You don't need to discover the real you. You don't have to take a gap year to work out who you really are. The fact that you change nappies all day has no bearing on your significance, because you belong to the Word. He made you, and he formed you. But he didn't just make you, and I think sometimes we miss this from Genesis 1. Listen to the love song. You're here because the Father loved the Son and wanted you to share in that love. God didn't just make you, he loved you into being. One writer has put it like this: all history is a story. Every particle has a story trailing backwards until it reaches the first word of the one and the three, the Trinity. And all of those trailing threads, those many are woven into the one great, ever-growing, divinely spoken story. Friends, we don't live on one of many hot rocks drifting aimlessly in a great black can. We're the fruit of the Father loving the Son in the power of the Spirit. We exist in a universe that we can love, a reassuring home where we can be participants in a romance rather than spectators in a mindless process. Genesis 1 is stunningly good for the heart when you get it. So the earth belongs to the Lord. Secondly, the earth is really, really good. Now we'll get to why it's broken and why there are things called PCs in the future, in future weeks. That'll be Genesis chapter 3. The PC is the result of the fall. Apple are doing their best to redeem it, but, you know, the PC is certainly evidence of a broken planet. But in Genesis 1, before the world collapsed in on itself, for reasons that we'll see, Moses wants us to know that the planet is really, really good. See, God says no to an earth that is formless and empty, doesn't he, in verse 2. Look down at verse 2. Now, the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God says no to a dark, formless, and empty earth. So chaos becomes cosmos. Darkness and emptiness become a world of light and color that teems and is abundant. Every shape, every line, every grain of sand made and formed and placed, every tree, every sparrow, every insect, given its right form and given a place that is just right. And he keeps saying how good it is. Did you hear that in the chapter? It's good, it's good, it's good, it's good. Everything that God makes fulfills its purpose as he forms an earth just right. And notice chapter verse 26, it's just right, and it's really just right when people are there. And we'll get to this over the coming weeks. He forms an earth that is just right for his image bearers to flourish in. He's delighted with it. So for Moses' first readers, as they're heading towards the promised land and they hear about the gods of the sun and the moon, Moses says, no, they're not celestial gods that have power. Baal doesn't have power. He don't need to be afraid of him. In fact, the sun and the moon are merely lights that God placed in the sky to rule days and darkness and seasons. They're placed by God. He made them. You don't need to be afraid of them. And the sea, it's not a place of chaos and danger. It's not where great monsters come from or where evil comes from. No, the sea is something that the Lord rules over. He separated it and put it just where he wanted it. And it's the functioning, it functions as a home of the great sea creatures, great and small. And they're good. It's good. It's not bad. He loves it. Paul in 1 Timothy 4 picks up this idea of Genesis 1, I think, and he's going against some false teaching. He says that people who are forbidding people of eating certain foods or being married and all very earthly things, Paul says everything God created is good and is to be received with thanksgiving. It's good. It's good. And it's to be received with thanksgiving. It's not to be worshipped, but neither is it to be despised. Friends, as you walk out of here and feel the rain on your face and the wind blowing, and as you look at the world that God has put around you, God says to us from Genesis 1, just enjoy it. It's really good. Delight in it as the home where you can know me. And it is breathtaking, isn't it? I was thinking, if I'd have been responsible for creation, I got very limited imagination. And I might have come up with a tree, maybe. And I might have got some grass, maybe a few flowers. But when the Lord created, he didn't just want one species of tree, did he? He went for thousands and thousands of species of grass and flowers and insects. Like the planet teems with life. It's no wonder that Attenborough can't help but be awestruck by it when he gives his commentary over his creation films. It's no wonder Brian Cox, when he did his, can't help but use the language of wonder and amazement. And all of them use the language of design and purpose, which is interesting. We just can't help it. It's just so good when you look at it. Now, there are problems with it. Yes, that's for another week. But it is good. In some religions, religion becomes about everything that's going on in my heart. And that's all the religion cares about, what's going on inside me. So you can have your private beliefs kind of locked up, safe and tight inside you, but they have virtually nothing to do with the facts of the real world around you. And in such religions, I think you're able to lead a double life. When in religious mode, you can do the religious thing. So you can turn up to church and you can sing and you can pray. But the rest of the week, it's got nothing to do with anything. And Genesis 1 says, no. We don't retreat from the world to do our Christian thing. No, the God we know, the Christ that we love, is the Lord over this physical creation, and he thinks it's really good. He's not just the Lord of some spiritual realm, as though there was some split in our identity as human beings, that there's the spiritual stuff and the physical stuff, the sacred stuff and the secular stuff. No, he made everything. It's all his. And so the Jesus that you know is not your little imaginary friend, but he's the emperor of the universe. And I think this has profound implications for the very nitty-gritty of our lives. Because it means whether you're changing nappies or walking up a mountain, whether you're heading out to work or weeding the garden, whether you're reading a book or watching a film, whether you're lying on a field staring at the sky, it's whatever you do, it's all good. It's all part of his world. There is a sense when we've got to get this. because this is, I think, is one of our big struggles. There is a sense in which the prayer meeting is as significant as the board meeting. There is a sense from Genesis 1 that that's true, that your community group and the Bible study is as important as the meal beforehand or dinner with other friends. See, God is spirit, absolutely, but he created a world that is physical, that can run around on a rugby pitch on a Saturday afternoon and love it. It's all good. Well, it was good in the beginning. And so it's not just the invisible life that matters. It's not just about what's going on in my heart that matters. It's not about me and my relationship with Jesus. No, the good news of the gospel deals with all of reality. All of it. From that piano to this Bible. It's as real as, and he has things to say about trees and grass and sun and food and water and rock. It shapes how you raise your kids, how you work in your job, how you steward your time or your money. We don't live in some detached fantasy world of religion. And our good news isn't just a little bit of, I don't know, a little bit of existential chocolate for the heart. And we certainly don't just tell people that Jesus saves their souls. Vomit out that gospel because it's rubbish. No, it's a good creation. It's his creation. He loves all of it. And he's going to redeem all of it. Means when God says he's coming to rescue and restore, and he promises a new heavens and a new earth, it's going to be just like this one. But perfected, physical, with hugs and food and trees and people. We're not going to play harps on a cloud, praise God, or eat Philadelphia, whatever the advert was. It's all of it. It's his. And he loves it so much that he went to the cross to rescue it. So the earth belongs to the Lord. The earth is really good. But finally, the earth is full of his grace. The melody of this song is grace. Grace unmeasured, vast and free, as that song has it. It's a creation that bursts with who God is and what he's like. And what is he like in Genesis 1? He loves to give us things for free. That's what he's like. The life that bursts out of him comes from his love. No one earned it. No one demanded it. He just gave it. Didn't have to, didn't need it. So the world around you, every tree, every blade of grass, everything cries out with how kind God is. How kind. The life that you have, the light that you see with, the breath that you're taking right now, it's all given to you freely. You've not earned any of it. The creation is brimming with messages of what God is like. I mean, think of Adam and Eve on the sixth day. What did they contribute? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. God said, and they were. See, the good creation that we see as good, which belongs to Jesus, is just screaming about how kind he is, how full of grace he is. And it must mean, for what we're doing here as a community church in the Rylands, as we seek to love the Rylands with the transforming message about Jesus, please, if you have heard that all we're about is evangelism, then let me correct that a little bit. See, loving this community with a transforming message about Jesus isn't finding time outside of the ordinary stuff of life to speak about Jesus, to do evangelism. No, it's about grasping that Jesus is Lord over all creation and asking him to fill you with his spirit so that you might live a life worthy of the Lord. Do you remember that from January the 1st, that was our prayer for the year, that we might live a life worthy of the Lord. And so speaking about him and living for him is not one activity that you do separate to everything else. No, it is central to everything that you do. It's Christ's creation. Friends, if it's his creation, you don't have to look very long or hard for opportunities to speak of him, do you? Every blade of grass is screaming about who he is and how kind he is. We don't love the Rylands, and we're not living in the Rylands just to do evangelism, as though that was an activity on the top of the list of things to do. You see, if we thought that was what we're about, what gospel are we communicating to people? What would people be being saved for? A life that's about looking for opportunities to do evangelism. That's not very attractive, is it? What a rubbish vision to put in front of people. Indeed, it's not very appealing. And sadly, our reason to even exist would end, wouldn't it, when Jesus returns? No more evangelism to do. No, rather, every moment of your day is an opportunity for Christ. Creation, after all, is his home, and it's full of his touches, full of his grace and goodness. Now, evangelism isn't just one thing, one top of the list priority. Living and speaking for Jesus is in everything. It's in every smelly nappy you throw out into the bin. Every time you clean your house up, you say, order is better than chaos. Very godly to clean your house. There's a bit of a debate goes on in Christian circles about whether a messy house or a clean house best betrays the gospel. Well, I think both. A messy house that's often cleaned. See, what is this place we call Earth? What kind of world is it? Well, I hope you see, if you get Genesis 1, it becomes a world that is where you can embrace every fact and enjoy it as belonging to Christ. It means that every day is full of purpose and meaning. It belongs to him. It means that you don't have to scrap around looking for an identity, desperately trying to form an identity of who you are by the things that you do or how you feel or where you go or what you buy. No, you're made by him. You belong to him. And he made it really good. And your very existence in this world and this world itself screams of how kind he is. Should we praise him together?